Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm Kate Young. Today on our show, Harvest Public Media brings us a story on the gene editing technology known as CRISPR. And when you're talking about eating local, foraging, and the flavors of fall, there's no greater symbol of autumn in the Midwest than a persimmon. We revisit some of our favorite persimmon recipes, plus the story of an unlikely steward of a prolific 60-foot persimmon tree in her own backyard. That's all coming up on Earth Eats. First up, we've got some news from our partners at Harvest Public Media. A weed killer called dicamba has damaged or destroyed millions of acres of soybeans across the Midwest in the last couple of years. A new report says that's not all that's being harmed. Harvest Public Media's Erica Hunsinger has more.
The issue with dicamba is drift. That is, when farmers spray it, it can float onto other plants. Now at least three states, Iowa, Illinois, and Tennessee, are seeing possible dicamba damage on oak trees. Iowa's Department of Natural Resources says it's received upwards of 1,000 complaints about pesticide damage to oaks. Some scientists think dicamba is the culprit, but there's no definitive finding. Emails obtained by the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting show Monsanto lobbyists told the Illinois Agriculture Department that some other pesticide likely was at fault. BASF, which also sells dicamba, says it's aware of issues with oak trees and that growers should reach out with concerns. Erica Hunsinger, Harvest Public Media.
And speaking of dicamba, the Environmental Protection Agency unveiled new restrictions this month on the controversial weed killer. Harvest Public Media's Christopher Husted reports.
Farmers who use the weed killer dicamba will have to follow stricter guidelines when spraying the product in 2018. New rules include spraying only during certain times of the day and when wind speeds are below 10 miles per hour. The goal is to prevent the chemicals from drifting in the wind and damaging neighboring crops. University of Missouri weed scientist Kevin Bradley says additional local regulations are likely to follow.
So now each state department of ag is going to be looking if they're going to add to these restrictions or just take them as is.
Bradley says certain states could add cutoff dates for dicamba use. Missouri and Arkansas temporarily banned the herbicide earlier this year. Christopher Husted, Harvest Public Media.
Bayer AG announced the sale of a large part of its agribusiness earlier this month, and as Harvest Public Media's Peggy Lowe reports, that will move the company closer to yet another big deal.
Bayer AG says it sold part of its crop science division to BASF for $7 billion. The sale includes Bayer's field crop seed and pesticide businesses. Bayer says the move is an active approach to help it win regulatory approval for its proposed buyout of Monsanto. That $66 billion deal will merge two of the world's largest agribusinesses. Some in the industry are concerned there will be less competition in the chemical and seed businesses, meaning higher costs for farmers. Peggy Lowe, Harvest Public Media.
Scientists have created a way to edit genes. They say the technique could create better medicine, prevent diseases, and grow new varieties of food. But genetic engineering in food has always been a touchy subject. So now, food industry groups are teaming up to influence public opinion. Harvest Public Media's Christopher Husted reports.
Genetically engineered corn and soybeans have been around since the 90s. You've probably heard them referred to as GMOs. The crops can withstand chemical pesticides, which can make life less challenging for farmers battling weeds. Detractors say the rise of genetically engineered crops give too much power to giant corporations and can contribute to an over-reliance on chemicals. And GMO rhymes with no, which makes campaigning against them pretty easy. Now there is new genetic technology that scientists want to apply to food. They've created mushrooms that don't brown and pigs that are resistant to a deadly disease. It's called, bear with me here, clustered regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats, or CRISPR for short. I called Allison Van Inenem, an animal genetics professor at University of California, Davis, to ask how exactly it works. She says it's a technique that can deactivate a gene.
It's editing. It's like going into a Word document and basically replacing one letter, maybe that's, you know, instead of wind, you want it to say wine.
Although CRISPR technology hasn't made it to the market yet, dozens of crops and livestock developed with CRISPR are moving closer. Here in the U.S., it will be up to the Food and Drug Administration to decide which new products are safe. Bill Even, CEO of the U.S. Pork Board, says the food industry missed a crucial element when sending out the earlier wave of genetically engineered food into the market.
There was never really any conversation with consumers around, well, what is this and what did it mean? And, you know, fast forward now, today, there's a lot of debate around GMOs and food. The public rightly has, you know, they're interested in knowing what's in their food.
That's why a group of heavyweights in the food industry have joined forces to form the Coalition for Responsible Gene Editing in Agriculture. It's funded by members like the Pork Board, Monsanto, Syngenta, and Bayer. Charlie Arnott leads the group. He says people often don't trust big companies and, by way of association, don't trust GMOs. The coalition wants to change that for food developed through CRISPR.
Those involved in technology have to be willing to be much more transparent.
Arnott has three key strategies to get consumers on board. Number one, it's not a secret.
And much more engaged in a public conversation and dialogue in order to answer those questions, address the skepticism, and ultimately result in earning consumer trust in what they're doing in gene editing.
The coalition has members sponsoring and attending events like the conference CRISPRCon, yes, that's a thing, to engage in public discussions about the technology and talk about potential benefits related to animal welfare and the environment. They hope to build trust, which is number two.
If people trust you, science doesn't matter. And if people don't trust you, science doesn't matter. It only matters after you cross that trust threshold. So you really have to engage in that values-based dialogue to build trust, and then you're given permission to introduce the science.
And that's the third strategy. These companies want consumers to know CRISPR is different from other forms of genetic engineering. CRISPR changes the way genes are expressed. It doesn't add genetic material from another species.
That's going to be the path that will ultimately lead to greater trust. If we shortcut that path, we run the risk of having this potentially significantly beneficial technology not be accepted.
So there's the sales pitch. Do you buy it? Christopher Husted, Harvest Public Media.
And there's more where that came from at harvestpublicmedia.org. And now for one of my favorite Earth Eats stories. This is Annie Corrigan from last fall.
Every year, it seems to me like persimmons start to fall earlier and earlier. Have you noticed that? They've been plummeting from Louise Briggs's backyard tree for over a week already. She's constructed an elaborate net to catch the little orange globes before they hit the ground.
It's silent once it hits the net. The adorable sound is it hitting leaves as it goes down. Yeah. Pinball machine. My persimmon pinball machine.
I met Louise last year. And we talked about the agony and the ecstasy of sharing her backyard with a 60-foot persimmon tree. Louise and her husband Bob moved to southern Indiana in the winter of 2010. They were hunting for a house to buy.
And the realtor said to me, oh, and there's a persimmon tree in the backyard, too. I'm from Boston. What do I know from persimmons, you know? So we just went about our business, went through the winter, and when it came towards spring, I decided I should start looking up persimmons, you know, and see what kind of tree this was. And so the distinctive thing about persimmon tree is that the bark is shaped like tiles, it said, you know, so the striations go up and down, but they also go sideways, kind of splitting it into little pieces. Springtime, I was out, you know, cleaning up the yard and stuff. I said, well, let me just look around and see which of these trees is the persimmon tree, because there were lots of trees in the yard. So I went from tree to tree. No, not that one. No, not that one. No, not that one. And I looked at the big one right in the middle of the yard, and I thought, surely not that one. So I walked over to the tree and looked at the bark, and it was totally perfect. It was picture perfect. Looked just like the pictures in the book.
The previous owners had just let the fruit fall and rot on the ground, killing all the grass around the tree. When the persimmons started falling in late summer, Louise and Bob quickly realized that that wasn't a good option for them.
We knew we had to net them because over the course of a few weeks, my little dog became a pudgy little dog, and I kept cutting back on his food thinking I'm feeding him too much. And then we realized, we looked out in the back, and when we put him out, he'd be out there eating persimmons, which are high calorie, and he was having a good time.
She spent a couple of hours every day collecting persimmons from the net in 10-gallon bins. She removed the caps and cleaned off the leaves. It was a chore. Every couple of weeks, she would throw a perpetual persimmon pulping party where friends would help her process the fruit into 2-cup bags. That year's haul, by the numbers, almost 40 10-gallon bins of fruit harvested, processed into 108 2-cup portions. Last year, Louise put the call out to locals. Free persimmons to anyone willing to put the work in.
Come on up.
About a dozen community members met at her house for that first persimmon party. Louise gave a tutorial on using the net, pushed the persimmons from the various parts of the net to the center, then pull down two of the poles to reveal a hole in the net.
So just go under, push it on over. When you get to the edge.
Oh, it smells so good.
Drop it down a little.
Look at that.
There they go.
It's almost
then
pudding.
You get the next bunch.
These persimmons are perfect, squishy, and a dark orange. In the kitchen, we take turns pulling off the caps and rinsing the fruit.
It's very, very sweet and delicious. And the dark ones are caramelized and perfect. These are awesome.
Once they're cleaned, it's over to Louise's motorized food mill.
So this is your high-tech lesson.
The ooze comes out one side, the seeds and the skins splurt out the other.
That's even gross, yes.
That day, everyone left with some pulp for making pudding, bread, and donut glaze. There's plenty more where this came from, Louise says. Every day, for the next several weeks, someone from the community will come and take her persimmons away. And Louise couldn't be happier. I couldn't help but ask, do you regret buying this house with this tree and the responsibility that comes with it?
I won't say that I haven't had moments. But no, I would miss it. I would really miss it.
And then swish, swish, swish goes another persimmon pinball plummeting from the tree down to the net. Louise's persimmon posse is already at it this year. I think she said something like 5 bins of persimmons fell from her tree the other day. If you find yourself with a plethora of persimmon pulp, go over to eartheats.org and search for persimmons to find lots of recipe ideas. We're also all about listener-submitted recipes. Do that with an email to eartheats@gmail.com.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses, located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. Need more coffee roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery, dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. NeedMoreRoasters.com. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Next up, we have more treasures from the Earth Eats archive. Two recipes from two different kitchens, both featuring persimmons.
It's otherworldly to me in a way that I can't really describe. It's like super earthy, but also sweet and complex. I honestly feel like a Greek goddess when I eat them a little bit, like I should be wearing a little crown.
Lisa Dorazeski of Rainbow Bakery. Persimmons. Tastes great, make you feel special, but man are they hard to turn into donut glaze. Before that, Daniel Orr levels up a traditional persimmon pudding with some shredded sweet potato.
All right.
Hey, hey.
Hey, Earth Eats, how you doing?
Pretty good. Look at those little perfect, pristine persimmons.
You know, persimmon trees can pop up just about anywhere that, a bird can poop. These are the little persimmons. These are actually from a bank parking lot in downtown Bloomington. If you pick them too early, they'll sometimes have kind of a allium kind of feel in your mouth, and it's very, very dry. So you want to be careful to taste them, make sure that they're super sweet. So what you do is they have these little crowns on them, and all you have to do is pop those off. And then the rest of the persimmon can be run through a food mill. And what we're gonna do today is we're gonna make, from the pulp, we're gonna make a pudding. So we're gonna start by adding our persimmon puree, 4 whole eggs. Okay, and then we've got our buttermilk, which we have 2 cups of buttermilk. Okay, and I just like that slightly acidic flavor that the buttermilk gives it. We have some dark rum. And then we have some vanilla extract, which we have 2 teaspoons. Okay, we're gonna add a little bit of salt, which brings out all the flavors, and a pinch of pepper. A lot of people don't think of putting pepper in desserts, but it kind of hits you in a different place on the tongue and makes it even more special. And then we're going to add our leaveners, which are our baking soda and baking powder. We're gonna add both brown sugar and granulated sugar, 1 cup of each, okay. Finally, we're going to add sweet potato that I was talking about, and we're going to add some melted butter. Mix that in. In the recipe, I call for some black walnuts. They're really, really intensely flavored, and I love them. Some people think that they're a little bit strong, but for us real Hoosiers, we like our black walnuts.
Do you get those locally?
Actually, they're from the backyard at my mother's house.
So really local.
Yeah. Okay, now we're going to add the flour. You're going to see that that's going to kind of bring the whole thing together. And it's a fairly loose batter. All right, here we go. We're going to pop it in the pan.
Oven at 325.
Put that in there. And we'll see you in an hour and a quarter, buddy.
Ready.
There he is. I'm just going to spoon a nice little dollop of this out. Okay, and we're going to have this with a little bit of vanilla ice cream.
and a generous drizzle of maple syrup. This stuff is rich, so you might find you want to cut the pudding into individual pieces and freeze them for later. Daniel has another persimmon pudding recipe you can try out at eartheats.org. In the kitchen at Rainbow Bakery, there are several ovens in one corner. There's a tall donut drying rack in the middle of the room. And then by the big window that looks out onto the sidewalk, that's where Lisa Dorozeski's prep station is.
Maybe third time I've made this.
Ever?
Yeah, because we had such a short run of them last year.
She's an owner-operator of Rainbow Bakery, an all-vegan shop that makes donuts and cupcakes and lots of other baked goodies. She said this is maybe the third time she's made this peppered persimmon donut glaze, for sure the first time she's making it this year. Developing a recipe with persimmons was not easy.
I hadn't had much experience cooking with it, and I thought, oh, this will be great. Like, I'll just, like, reduce it, and it'll, like, be an excellent glaze. But it just, like, basically, like, almost seized up like chocolate, where you're just, like, thickens like crazy without putting, like, any thickening agent in it.
I guess it's thick just naturally. The pulp is really viscous.
Yeah. It has a lot of pectin in it, so it's, like, you can't reduce it the same way you could, like, reduce, like, strawberries or something.
So she uses straight persimmon pulp, which is naturally very sweet. The thing is, all their glazes contain a hefty amount of another very sweet ingredient, organic powdered sugar. She needed something to balance out that flavor.
What I did for that was I added black pepper to the recipe to kind of cut the sweet. Because there's no way around it. We have to use the sugar. Like, if I don't add powdered sugar to the recipe, then the glaze won't grab onto the donut in a way that would be pleasurable to eat. It would basically be like plopping applesauce on top of a donut or something. Maybe not that bad.
She makes the glazes in small portions, so this batch will last them for 5 days.
So I'm going to go ahead and add about a half a cup of hot water. This is like from the hot water spigot. I feel like sometimes the spices might get muddled in all of this sugar mess, so I'm just going to like basically very lightly heat them up. So I'm adding a teaspoon of coriander, half teaspoon of black pepper. So I'm just going to whisk this a little bit to get the spices incorporated. Okay. So now I'm going to add the persimmon pulp, about 3/4 cup. The recipes for glaze are pretty loose because you're really just going for the consistency that is appropriate. So like, I wrote this recipe last year, but the persimmons are different than they were last year. So we might need to tweak it to find the correct consistency. So then I'm using a hand mixer and I'm mixing the water, spice, and persimmon together. So now I'm going to add this, and this is organic evaporated cane juice powdered, aka fancy powdered sugar.
You're adding a lot.
I'm shooting for around 6 cups, which sounds scary, but this is going to feed, like, this is going to yield so many donuts. It's spread out for a lot of humans, so don't worry about that. It tastes so much better than conventional powdered sugar, and like, this is the only true vegan sugar because it's processed differently.
You can truly taste a difference?
Yeah, it's like it has more depth to it. It needs a little more powdered sugar. We want it to be like a little more opaque, and I can tell by looking at it that it's like not. It's gonna goop up more than I want it to. All right, this is pretty okay. We just got some clumps, so I'll work those out later.
Now to the donuts. They're cake donuts made with almond milk, sugar, oil, flour, and a dash of nutmeg. We'll get the glaze on these, and then there are 2 additional persimmon preparations that Lisa adds.
So you're just plopping it in there.
You just plop it in there.
So I see now why you wanted it to be thicker.
Yeah. By nature, they are gooier than all of the other ones, but it'll drip down a little bit, but for the most part, it's sticking. So then I'm going to plop. This is the reduced persimmon with coconut oil, and this is basically made with just like a cup of persimmon, 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, stirred nearly constantly on low heat until it thickens up to like pumpkin consistency. Yeah, I put it in a piping bag with a little star tip and just made a little burst. So then you can taste the persimmon very well in that. And then this is just the straight up persimmon pulp.
It's so pretty. 3 types of orange.
Yeah, they're very autumnal. The perfect autumnal donut.
Put this glaze on pancakes, on cookies. Get yourself to the website to see the recipe and some pictures of Lisa Dorozeski in the Rainbow Bakery kitchen. It's at eartheats.org.
And that was some classic Earth Eats there with Annie Corrigan, engaging with the community, engaging with local food. It doesn't get more local than persimmons falling from a tree in your own backyard. We've got all the persimmon recipes for you at eartheats.org. We have the ones you just heard, plus a panna cotta from Chef Daniel Orr and a persimmon waffle recipe that I cooked up the year I found myself with an abundance of persimmons. You'll find it all at eartheats.org. And you can also find us on Twitter, sharing the latest in food news and culture and more recipes at Earth Eats. Production support comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses. Located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview, needmoreroasters.com. We can't forget to thank all the good people that make Earth Eats possible, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, everyone at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, Indiana University Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Annie Corrigan. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young. Thanks for tuning in.